You're listening to the Growing Leaders Podcast.
Welcome back to the Growing Leaders Podcast. This is Jake Sumner, and we're excited that you're joining us for another episode. In our last episode of the Growing Leaders Podcast, we talked about the idea of students are getting stuck and really looked at some practical examples for how we can help students get unstuck these days. Today, we're going to change topics a little bit, and we're really going to look at the idea of communication and specifically how we communicate with the next generation. We've got Dr. Tim Elmore with us in the studio here today, and Tim, we'd just love to hear some of your thoughts on this communication gap that's between maybe the generation of teachers, parents, youth workers, and then this current generation of students, and realizing that a lot of times we're saying things, and for some reason it's just not connecting with our students.
Yeah, Jake, I think communication is the biggest assumption we make as adults. We think it's happening, but not so much. And in fact, it's probably exaggerated today because there's so many messages coming from all directions that we assume it's going on. And once again, we find out later the kid didn't hear it, or the student didn't hear it, or my player on a team didn't hear it. And I thought I was very clear seven times. I think of the classic illustration that Chip and Dan Heath talk about. They talk about the Stanford University research project back in 1990 when Elizabeth Newton grabbed a group of individuals and she divided them into two teams. And she called the two teams the tappers and the listeners. And the basic experiment was one group of people were going to tap their finger on a table in rhythm to a song, that was well known, like the Star Spangled Banner or Happy Birthday or something like that. Knowing that this song is so familiar, I know you're going to guess it.
Of course.
And of course, the listening team was to guess the song. But before they did the experiment, they asked the tappers, how often do you think they're going to guess the song? And they guessed at least 50% of the time they'll be able to get it. You know, obviously they're good tappers. But the bottom line is they did this game and it was less than 2% of the time the listeners actually could guess the song. And the real deal was this. When you're tapping out with your finger on a table, Happy Birthday or the Star Spangled Banner, you can hear it in your head. You're hearing the song play as you tap. They're not hearing in their head. They've got something else. In fact, they got a billion things going on in their mind. And so somehow between my mouth and your ears, the message falls to the ground. And I think it is up to us as the communicator to make sure our message gets through loud and clear.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's such a clear illustration of what's happening in the classroom every day, what's happening even as parents give instruction to their kids. And I think we all realize that that disconnect is taking place. That story just really, really puts the finger right on the pulse of it. What are some ways that you think that communication has changed? What are some ways maybe that technology has affected the way that we communicate? I think it has gone through a radical, transformation these last 10 or 15 years. But what are some of the factors that are really causing it to change so drastically?
Yeah, well, Jake, way back in the 1960s, the term the generation gap emerged. I was growing up then. This is my first 10 years of my life. But I remember people talking about the generation gap. Today, I think more aptly we can call it the communication gap. There's multiple generations around all trying to communicate. We're all on Twitter, let's face it, you know. but I think the gap now lies in the fact that technology has given us such an easy means to say something, even if I got nothing to say, that we're inundated with messages that we need to filter.
We
have to build a strong filter on our head. And so a parent or a teacher or a coach or an employer might say, this message is important to me. I'm going to download it to you. But the listener may not have made that decision yet. So I'm using a little acronym these days. It's kind of new, but it's the scene of Generation Y, S-C-E-N-E. And it reminds me of five words that I think aptly describes the communication challenge, if you will, of them. For instance, the letter S in scene is speed. Their world is full of speed. Our world is full of speed. But the natural unintended consequence of that is slow is bad. The letter C in scene is convenience. We love the world of convenience. the natural unintended consequence. Hard is bad. The letter E in scene, entertainment. Let's face it, we don't want to hear any communication that's not somewhat entertaining. We even use the word edutainment now. You know, teachers need to be edutainers. Well, that means boring is bad. And kids check out in the first 7 minutes of the class, maybe sooner if the teacher looks like they're not relevant. The letter N in the Gen Y scene is nurture. Risk is bad. We have nurtured these kids. They're used to us somehow making it easier for them, and we'll take away the consequence if it doesn't work. And then the last letter E is entitlement. And I know that's way overused, and I want to be very respectful of the emerging generation that may be listening. But as a whole, we all feel a little more entitled than we did 50 years ago, which means labor is bad. Hard work is bad.
Yeah.
Well, those things that are bad, slow, you know, boring, hard, those are the very things that make me more adult.
Yeah.
That prepare me for the workaday world I'm going to have to go into. And so I feel like we've got to find a way to build a bridge from where they are to where they need to go, and that's good communication.
Definitely. Well, I think that gives us a great handle to think about the challenge that, that Gen Y specifically faces. And even just being able to put our finger on some of those problems, I think, really helps some solutions start to emerge. And really, like you said, the end goal that we want to do is really to prepare students to step into the workforce, to be able to hit the ground running, you know, when they leave home, when they leave our college, when they leave whatever, you know, position that we have with them, that that level of influence. We really want to set them up for that next stage of life well.
Absolutely. And not just making it, Jake, but you know, and I both know, to lead the way.
Exactly.
To move forward and in their 20s be someone that's relevant enough to follow.
Definitely. Well, as we think about the workplace, what are some ways that you think that communication has changed even there? I mean, obviously, it's undergone the same shift that the rest of the culture has.
No doubt about it.
So what are some ways that that we think that that looks a little bit different from it did the way it did just a few years ago?
Well, Jake, I'm going to ask you and the listeners to think that you and I were talking about this the other day. It seems like if we had two columns in our head, and on the one column, the left-hand column, it was most employers tend to do this.
Yeah.
And then in the left-hand column, or excuse me, the right-hand column, it was most young employees tend to do this. I think there's a gap.
Yeah.
For instance, the typical corporation in America, a baby boomer's running it, born in 1958 or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's this Gen Y young employee, sometimes tons of them coming in, and there's a huge gap. Let me give you some examples. See if this doesn't make sense to you. Most employers tend to email information to colleagues. I mean, we think we're on the cutting edge when we email somebody. Most young employees tend to Facebook information. At least they would prefer to use that if they were allowed.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Most employers tend to use a phone to call people. Most young employees use a phone to text people. In fact, I always joke about how guys will, you know, break up with a girlfriend on a text.
Exactly.
You know? Most employers tend to relay data through one-way download. I've got a message. Just listen. Most young employees learn best through uploading and interacting, sharing their own thoughts. Here's another one. Most employers tend to prefer copy and words to report facts. Most young employees love images to report and receive facts, stories. They want narrative. Here's another one. I think most employers tend to leap into what others must know. But most young employees tend to want to grasp the why first.
Yeah, in fact, they're always, why?
and coaches across the country that we work with, athletic teams, will go, I'm tired of explaining the why. I just want them to do it.
Well, it's like the five-year-old kid. You know,
Why? It's so true.
But it carries over.
Into 16 years old or 22 years old. Absolutely. It's so true. And then most employers tend to view the world with facts and figures. But I think most young employees tend to view the world with stories and feelings. Wow. It's that right brain, left brain thing. We in the older generation, maybe not you, but me in the older generation, we lived almost exclusively in the left hemisphere of the brain. It was didactic. Facts, figures, memorize these, and you'll make it.
Exactly.
I think today, outside of our school, the young people exist in the right hemisphere of the brain. It's imagination and story and feelings, and I think that kind of inspiration stuff leads to the left brain, but we got to start with the right brain, and that's where we communicators have got to make a change.
Wow, so true. Yeah, I think that's a great example of just that communication gap that exists, and you know, I think all of us feel that tension, especially those of us that are in a position where we do communicate with the next generation, and the messages get missed somehow. As we continue to dig into this a little bit more, what are some big reasons you think that emerge for this? I think, you know, we've done a great idea of pointing at some practical examples of how this happens. But what are some reasons for this problem? What are the overarching sort of themes maybe that emerge that would help us kind of understand this a little bit more?
Yeah, well, maybe in a nutshell, before we talk about some solutions today, it seems like there's a handful of reasons that really serve as umbrellas that you could put everything under that makes communication hard today.
Yeah.
Let me just kind of, we could just banter on some of these.
Sure.
I think the first one, Jake, that you and I have talked about before is that ambiguity is greater now than at any time in modern history.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, let's just say pluralism is everywhere. There's all kinds of worldviews and beliefs, way more than when I was a kid growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think pluralism leads to ambiguity. If there's so many different ways of looking at it, and we need to know there are different ways of looking at it, but that just means I'm less apt to be clear on what you're trying to say,
it's
Bob.
True. It,
you know, without you explaining further.
Yeah, in a world of limitless options, it's really hard to get down to, okay, what do I actually need to do?
There's seldom one right answer. There are often so many options, so much disagreement on what's right and wrong, what's politically correct to say, what's tolerant. And it often paralyzes kids from making decisions.
So true.
I think they're ambiguous because, not because they don't have a vision, but because they have 17 visions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's reason number one. I think another reason why communicating effectively is hard is young people are often, notice I said often, not always, but often, unwilling to work at comprehension or application because so much is done for us today that I don't want to work at this. Let me give you a great illustration. I have a great friend who's a professor at a university in Texas, and he was talking to me about how his students just were not getting his class. And he said the class had not gotten harder over the decades he'd been teaching it, but they were willing to work less at, you know, the homework and the exams and so forth.
Yeah.
So I just suggested that maybe he try some new things. And I talked about epic, you know, be experiential, participatory, image rich and connected. We talked about that in one of our last podcasts. Well, this professor decided to take me up on the challenge. And it was just an anecdotal thing, but he started making his classrooms more epic that would engage the students to work at learning. He started doing some hilarious things. For instance, he had the students help the rest of the class, like teams of students, prepare for the next test. He'd have a team of four say, okay, this section of the textbook, help us understand. What do we need to do to remember? Well, they were doing skits up front and movies and videos and dances. And I mean, they were laughing, but they remembered it.
Yeah.
He said at the end of his class, the grades went up 1.5 points, a grade and a half. So a C to a B plus, a B to an A.
That's incredible.
That's measurable.
Yeah.
And most teachers would say, whatever I got to do that, I want to do that. I think it was the pedagogy that changed. The content didn't change. How he delivered did change.
It's amazing how that's a fairly simple change to make, yet incredible results at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
So a lot of times we're not asking people to throw out the baby with the bathwater necessarily, but just to look through a slightly different lens.
Right.
And to make those small changes. And yet you see when the results come, it's incredible.
Yeah.
What
and
happens when effective communication really lands.
Yeah. It is. It's amazing. Well, here's another reason I'm thinking that makes it hard. Information is fully accessible to kids at any age.
Yeah.
I know every adult listening to this gets this, but if you're a parent, you know, man, by the time your kid's 4 years old, they know how to navigate a website and or their smartphone that they've picked up off your counter. I love telling the story. The first year out of my daughter's college career, she taught preschool. And I love telling the story that she told me. She said she got home from school one day and said that dad, one of her four-year-olds had picked up a regular hardback book in the class, but was stroking his finger across the cover of the book, waiting for this iPad to work and move and shift. And she said, sweetie, you got to actually open this up. It's paper, and you got to look at the pictures
inside.
It's true.
A book is just a broken iPad
now. That's right. It is. It's true.
Wait a second. What's going on here?
But what an illustration of the fact that information is everywhere, and they know how to – they seem to intuitively know how to do the technology, where they may not intuitively know how to do the book.
Exactly.
So it's just amazing. So one last bit on this. Because of the law of supply and demand, because information is in huge supply, the demand is less. Herbert Simon said, a wealth of information creates a poverty of attention.
That's good.
I won't say that again. A wealth of information creates a poverty of attention. When it's all there, it's just, I don't know, I don't want to work at it.
Yeah, it's so true. Attention is the thing that's scarce now.
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's the new currency. Can I have your attention? And then the last thing, I don't know if I'm going too long here, but the last thing I would say is that young people have been conditioned to be consumers.
Yeah.
And that's not bad. It's not their fault. We did it. But we are conditioned to be buyers and consumers rather than necessarily contributors.
Mm-hmm.
So communication, it's all on you to get to me.
Yeah.
You better do it well because I may not work at it at all, and, mm-hmm. and I'm taught to consume. And again, I feel like this is a good reason for us to build a bridge. I love using the phrase that adults must build bridges of relationship that can bear the weight of mm-hmm. truth.
Definitely.
And I think that's maybe what we need to be doing now.
Definitely. Wow. Well, those are some great reasons for us to think about why this gap is taking place and why it's hard to communicate with the next generation. As we really push into this, I'd love to get us to a place where we have some practical tools we can put in people's hands, because I know this is a giant dilemma, and we've talked around it. I think nobody is surprised by the fact that there is that gap there. But as we think about communicating with the next generation, what do you think we really need to know as we approach it and as we really want to do it effectively?
Yeah.
And maybe change the way that we're doing it currently?
Yeah. Well, here's a thought that I've been kind of mulling over for the last couple of years. It seems like when I, as the communicator, want to communicate a message that might be brand new
mm-hmm.
or the other person saying, I'm not sure I agree with this, or in fact, I might think something opposite. What do I have to do to go from soup to nuts, from the very beginning to the very end, and get them to get them from a place that says, I don't know if I like this, it's all new to me, to mm-hmm. I not only agree with this, I could pass it on myself.
Yeah.
So let me just walk through some stages that, again, you and I have talked about before, but this sure. might be helpful for our listeners. I think stage one of this journey is would be called incentive.
Mm-hmm.
All I mean by this is this. We make a mistake as communicators when we jump right into the what before we get to the why.
Yeah.
We just talk about the why that keeps coming up all
exactly.
the time.
Exactly.
If I, as a communicator, will take the first 5-6 minutes of my time with this listener
mm-hmm.
and really get into the why and then create an incentive for them to learn
definitely.
Or to get this concept. Here's why you're going to want to know this in 5 years or 1 year
exactly.
or it's on the test. The favorite question ever, is this going to be on the test?
Mm-hmm.
That's a why question.
Definitely.
Why do I listen? Oh, well, it may not be relevant, but if you're going to test me on it, doggone it, I'll learn it.
Exactly.
So I think the incentive step, students are basically intuitively and inside saying, I have a need and I must gain a solution. That's mm-hmm. the first thing we want them to be thinking. I have a need. You just reminded me of this need and I need to gain a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the why step, incentive. Now, the next step is a word we don't use typically in everyday conversation, but it's a disequilibrium.
Mm.
We become uncomfortable when communication is given and then a solution isn't immediately given.
Yeah.
There's a moment of uncomfortableness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think great teachers do this very well. There's a season of discomfort. In fact, maybe argument, maybe pushback.
Yeah.
But I'm feeling imbalanced on the inside. I look through the filing cabinets in my head and I find nothing
mm-hmm.
to put this new thing under. So, and this is good. Now, the problem we have is we're in such a speed and convenience day, we want to give them the answer right away.
Exactly.
And I'm thinking, no. Slow down and just let them feel discomfort, because I think we only really learn something when we have to struggle for it.
Ooh,
that's just
good.
My opinion. But I think if I force that listener to just struggle, now it's a tender balance, because if they have to struggle too much, they'll give up and I've lost them.
Exactly.
But I must create a little bit. If it just comes to me so easily, it may be in one ear and not the other.
True.
So disequilibrium is it's when I'm uncomfortable and this is mm-hmm. unfamiliar and I'm now resisting, but I'm about ready to say I want to learn something.
Yeah.
Okay. Third stage is what educators would commonly call the schema.
Mm-hmm.
We use schemas to learn things. We naturally do. We don't even know what to call it. In fact, yeah. this word is new for some of our listeners, but education majors will remember this word. The schema is simply a framework with which I can take new information that I don't yet know mm-hmm. about, it's unfamiliar,
yeah.
and attach it to already familiar information.
Mm-hmm.
I find a file for it, if you will.
Yeah.
So great communicators will use analogies. You know, you understand this. Well, that explains that.
Exactly.
You know, we think of down through history. Great communicator. Christ himself used parables
mm-hmm.
about seeds and birds and fig trees that the farmers and shepherds immediately knew
exactly.
and said, I get that now.
Yeah.
So you take familiar and you explain the unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm.
Jake, at Habitudes, at Growing Leaders, we've developed this thing called Habitudes.
Mm-hmm.
They are simply schemas, or they fit into the schema
mm-hmm.
where we can say rivers and floods or the mirror effect, and
exactly.
they know exactly what a mirror is, they know exactly what a flood is, and they can understand a concept that they need to know for life.
Sure.
So I think stage three is we want them to be saying, I must connect the unfamiliar concept to a familiar one, and mm-hmm. that connection is everything.
Yeah.
So we just happen to believe the images are absolutely crucial in today's world mm-hmm. to communicate.
So true.
Now, the next stage is emotion. Mm-hmm. I think we need to allow a season for the listener, particularly the young person, to emote. Mm-hmm. That means they may get angry or disagree or just feel something, but I need to let them feel something. And the reason I underscore this is I think in the past we've been so intellectual mm-hmm. In school, in universities, in churches, it's been very much an intellectual transmission.
Yeah.
Think of these things, and we have this mental gymnastics going on. Mm-hmm. But I think real learning that changes our life is intellect and emotion.
Sure.
I needed my heart and my head to be involved.
Definitely.
So in this stage, the neurotransmitters in our brain are sparking feelings and emotions, and they ignite, and we need to let them ignite. We mm-hmm. need to give them a chance to feel, not just think. The next stage, I think, of the true internal journey mm-hmm. is social integration. Now, that's just a big 50-cent term used among educators to mean we need to stop talking and let them talk.
Yeah.
We need to put them in smaller clusters or communities. Mm-hmm. And in these groups, we need to let them think out loud.
Exactly.
And discuss it and process. Now, when I talk to teachers about this, they go, number one, they say, I don't have time for that. And I say, I don't think you have time not to do this if you really want them to learn.
Wow.
Now, that's a big if. But secondly, a lot of times they say, well, isn't that messy? It is messy, absolutely.
Yeah.
But student engagement is almost always messy. Mm-hmm. I have found that they'll go beat around, they'll circle around. The kids will get silly and stupid and say dumb things. But eventually, mm-hmm. the vast majority of the time, they will come to the right answer. They will draw. I mean, they will hold each other accountable. They'll kind of do checks and balances mm-hmm. in the group and say, that's stupid.
Exactly.
So if we'll let the process go and trust the process, I think that social integration actually works.
Yeah.
The next stage is filters. This is where the dendrites inside of our brain that every one of us have start mm-hmm. firing. And here's how it happens. If we're in a small group, and let's say a subject comes up that is controversial, there's no black and white answer, and people start talking, we tend to naturally say inside of ourselves, mm-hmm. I disagree with you. I agree with you. I disagree with you. I agree with you. I disagree. Yeah. Those are the filters, and those are the dendrites processing so you know what you're going to embrace.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're way too polite and civil to say it out loud, although some people do that. Some kids will freely say, I disagree with you.
Oh, yeah.
But that stage is pretty important, and that usually happens in that small group mm-hmm. where we let them disagree, and we need to not run from conflict. Conflict is good. It's that movies and meetings habitude. Mm-hmm. Movies are very attractive because they have a conflict in them.
Exactly.
Okay. And then the last step or stage along the way, I think, could simply be called active involvement.
Mm-hmm.
I think we really don't learn something until we get up off our bottoms yeah. and do something about it.
Definitely.
We actually have to practice it.
Mm-hmm.
So information without application somehow,
exactly.
Yeah, it just stops.
Right.
In fact, this is a little too curt and blunt, but information without application leads to constipation. I mean, intellectual. I just get stopped up and I don't actually
so
do. You know, so that's what I think.
But I guess as we, really try to drill down on this. What do we do with this information now? What would be some practical ways that we could really apply yeah. this in our communication with students? Yeah.
Well, Jake, that's a great question. And I would say based on the internal journey we just talked about, mm-hmm. here's what's going on inside of them
yeah.
as they get new information. I think there's a handful of steps we can take as communicators mm-hmm. or leaders to make sure that they go through that journey.
Yeah.
So let me do these real quick. Step one or action step one is engage. I think before I ever get to all the great content I want to share, I need to engage them. Mm-hmm. And that means my content and delivery needs to create a dilemma on the inside of them that I plan to address with my content.
Yes.
But before I get to the what, I got to do the why.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm engaging. Maybe it's a personal story of a struggle I've got. They're leaning in as they hear me tell this terrible conflict I've got in my house or my heart or whatever.
Exactly.
But boy, they're leaning in. Then the next step after engage is connect. Mm-hmm. We move from that's my personal conflict, and mm-hmm. I'm creating a dilemma inside your brain now, to I show this is a humankind issue.
Yeah.
We all struggle with lack of focus.
Definitely.
Or whatever.
There's that yeah. bigger picture that's at play there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that might be a statistic or mm-hmm. something, but we move from personal to from micro to macro
yeah.
in step two. And then step three would be the big idea. Mm-hmm. For us, it's often a habitude at that point. Here's the image that stands for a principle I want you to learn. But that big idea always addresses the dilemma that mm-hmm. we just created in the first 7 minutes of our time.
Yeah.
So big idea, there it is. In fact, if you're in a classroom setting, you might want to do the next step, support. You support that big idea.
Right.
There's documentation. There's research.
Mm-hmm.
But the next step after that big idea then is converse. You even said this best as we were just talking. They need a chance to talk themselves.
Right.
You need to spark conversation. So maybe the communicator provides a well-crafted question,
mm-hmm.
and that group of 25 students turns into five groups of five.
Yeah.
But now they're processing and thinking out loud, just like we talked about. And then the next step is personalize.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you bring the groups back together, and you're hearing what they had to say, but you're now personalizing the application of each one of those groups.
Yeah.
You're showing how it works for freshman students. You're showing how it might work for a senior that's mentally checking out already and going on to the next stage of their journey. I think it's very important for communicators to not get every demographic that's listening right. to them, but touch on a few that they go, okay, this really is relevant to my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last step along the way is illustrate.
Yeah.
Everybody probably knows this already, but there's nothing more powerful than when you've shared some content and now you're giving them a picture,
mm-hmm.
a point for their head and a picture for their heart. So this closing illustration or story may be from somebody in the group that you have them hop up and share,
yeah.
maybe from your own life, maybe from USA Today or New York Times,
exactly.
but there's a clear picture of what this might look like if it was practiced.
Wow.
That, I believe, makes us far better communicators mm-hmm. than we were before.
Definitely. Wow. Well, those are some great practical takeaways. And Tim, we just thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the podcast. And all the listeners out there, we are so excited that you guys are joining us for yet another episode. We'll be coming back with another episode in a few weeks here. But before we close out, I just wanted to draw your attention to just a couple of quick things. The first thing would be, if you want to continue this journey with us, Tim blogs every single day at blog.growingleaders.com. So just head over to that website. There's definitely some more practical resources there, all focused around leading the next generation, how we do that well. So I'd encourage you guys just to check that out and to continue following us on the journey there. Another thing would be, we would love to get some feedback as you listen to the podcast. If there are questions that come to your mind, if there's some topics that you'd like for us to address, we really want this to be a fun medium where we can interact and where we can continue to tweak this and make it better and really provide some practical solutions for you guys that are out there in the trenches doing the work with students day after day. So if you've got some things that come to mind, please send an email to jake@growingleaders.com, jake@growingleaders.com. And we'd love to incorporate some of your questions, some of your feedback as we prepare for these next episodes. And then the final thing would be, if you really want to dig in a little bit deeper on this communication issue, we have a free assessment that we've created, and it's available on our website at habitudesforcommunicators.com, habitudesforcommunicators.com. And just head to that website. There's a button you can press there that just says take assessment. There's a quick 5-minute assessment there that will really help you drill down on both your communication strengths that you currently have now and maybe some areas for improvement. And we really hope that that will even help you as you continue to increase your ability to communicate with the next generation and maybe give you some practical places to put that effort and to really identify, hey, these are some areas I really want to improve in as I continue to lead the next generation. So once again, we thank you guys for joining us for this episode, and we look forward to seeing you back on the next episode of the Growing Leaders Podcast.